Hi, I'm Richard Karn, and you may have seen me on TV talking about the world's number one expandable garden hose. Well, the brand new Pocket Hose Copperhead with Pocket Pivot is here, and it's a total game changer. Old-fashioned hoses get kinks and creases at the spigot, but the Copperhead's Pocket Pivot swivels 360 degrees for full water flow and freedom to water with ease all around your home. When you're all done, this rust-proof anti-burst hose shrinks back down to pocket size for effortless handling and tidy storage. Plus, your super light and ultra-durable pocket hose Copperhead is backed with a 10-year warranty. What could be better than that? I'll tell you what, an exciting radio-exclusive offer just for you. For a limited time, you can get a free pocket pivot and their 10-pattern sprayer with the purchase of any size Copperhead hose. Just text WATER to 64000. That's WATER to 64000 for your two free gifts with purchase. W-A-T-E-R to 64000.
By texting 64000, you agree to receive recurring automated marketing messages from Pocket Hose. Message and data rates may apply. No purchase required. Terms apply. Available at pockethose.com/terms.
Hi, I'm Richard Karn, and you may have seen me on TV talking about the world's number one expandable garden hose. Well, the brand new Pocket Hose Copperhead with Pocket Pivot is here, and it's a total game changer. Old-fashioned hoses get kinks and creases at the spigot, but the Copperhead's Pocket Pivot swivels 360 degrees for full water flow and freedom to water with ease all around your home. When you're all done, this rust-proof anti-burst hose shrinks back down to pocket size for effortless handling and tidy storage. Plus, your super light and ultra-durable pocket hose Copperhead is backed with a 10-year warranty. What could be better than that? I'll tell you what, an exciting radio-exclusive offer just for you. For a limited time, you can get a free pocket pivot and their 10-pattern sprayer with the purchase of any size Copperhead hose. Just text WATER to 64000. That's WATER to 64000 for your two free gifts with purchase. W-A-T-E-R to 64000.
By texting 64000, you agree to receive recurring automated marketing messages from Pocket Hose. Message and data rates may apply. No purchase required. Terms apply. Available at pockethose.com/terms.
Setlist, the music business podcast from CMU. This week, BMG moves to make record contracts fairer. Welcome to Setlist, the music business podcast from CMU. I'm Andy Malt, and with me is Chris Cook. Hello, Chris.
Hello there.
As ever, we are going to be taking a look back at some of the biggest and most interesting music industry news stories of the last week. A week when the founder of the Kickass Torrents file sharing website went missing.
He's gone.
Where's he gone?
Has anyone seen him?
No one knows.
If you've seen him, well, it depends which side of this argument you're on. You either need to phone up the US prosecutors who want to get him in court to face charges of copyright crimes, or maybe you're on the other side, in which case maybe you want to keep quiet if you happen to know his whereabouts. Yeah, I kind of forgotten about Kickass Torrents.
Yeah, it seems very old news now. I mean, it is old news. It's a long time since it shut down.
So when they shut down Kickass Torrents, which, let's not forget, for a time was probably the most popular file-sharing BitTorrent website on the internet, even more popular than the good old Pirate Bay for a while, it got shut down. And around about the same time it got shut down, the Ukrainian guy who ran it was arrested in Poland at the request of the US authorities, because America has an extradition treaty with Poland. And, well, I suppose immediately we saw parallels with the very long-running efforts to extradite Kim.com, the founder of Mega Upload, to likewise face charges of criminal copyright infringement in the US courts. He's in New Zealand. Initially, it looked like the Kickass case was going to progress much faster, because within a few months, I think he got arrested in mid-2016 and in March 2017, so maybe that's slightly more than a few months. But relatively quickly, a court in Poland said, yeah, you can extradite that guy, send the Kickass guy to the American courts. But of course, there are always appeal options with things like this. And yeah, that's been going on ever since. Earlier this year, the prosecutors in the US updated the American court that would ultimately hear the copyright case if it ever got there, to say extradition process is still going on, the appeals are still being pursued. We have no idea when we might find out whether or not this guy can actually be extradited. But the latest update in the last week is he has disappeared. He is no longer in Warsaw, as far as the Polish authorities are concerned. It means he's broken his bail terms, so he won't get his bail money back. Nobody knows where he is, so the American prosecutors conceded there was no point progressing with the extradition attempts in Poland, because as far as it seems, he ain't in Poland.
Yeah, I mean, presumably somewhere that doesn't have an extradition treaty with the US, because, I mean, that was his first mistake, wasn't it, to go to Poland, where he could be extradited. But, yeah, he could really be anywhere. Maybe he is still in Poland. Maybe he's just hiding. Maybe there's a room in his house they didn't check.
Yeah, maybe he's dug a hole in his garden and he's hiding in the garden. Or maybe he's gone back to the Ukraine. I don't know whether the Ukraine has an extradition treaty. The fact that the US was so keen to get him while he was in Poland would suggest that there isn't a similar extradition treaty with the Ukraine. I must admit, I'm not an expert on extradition law. Which countries have extradition treaties with which countries, let alone whether or not those extradition treaties are any use when ultimately you're trying to do someone for a copyright crime. But yeah, so that could be the end of that story. Because if they never find him again, well, on a legal level, if they can't find him, they can't charge him and they can't try him. Or maybe in a way, if he does sort of go on the run, that makes it a more interesting story. Maybe this is going to be the second half of the movie when they make a movie about Kick-Ass Torrance. Who knows? Kick-Ass the movie.
I think, I have a feeling someone made that. I don't know. It sounds familiar.
I'm not sure that one was about the guy who set up a file-sharing site.
It was a loose interpretation of events, yeah.
And went on the run. But anyway, that was this week's Kick-Ass update. But just to be clear, that is not what we're here to talk about this week.
No, later on we'll be discussing why the biggest threat to South Korea's economy at the moment could be the members of BTS's mandatory military service. But first, BMG has announced that it is eliminating the so-called controlled composition clause from its record deals in the US. That decision will affect both new deals and those in its catalogue, a lot of which it has acquired from other record companies as it has grown rapidly through a lot of acquisitions. And it's a move that's been widely welcomed among the songwriter community, who stand to benefit fairly significantly from this.
Yeah, I guess to understand why this is seen as quite a big deal amongst songwriters and also music publishers, well, in order to do that, you've got to know what the controlled composition clause is.
It would certainly help.
So, this is a sneaky clause that is pretty common in American record contracts that basically relates to the so-called mechanical royalties that a record label has to pay when it puts out a CD to cover the song copyright contained in the recording that appears on the record. Because, of course, while record companies own and control and exploit sound recording copyrights, or what we sometimes call the master rights, in a recording, almost by definition, you're going to find a song. The song is also protected by copyright, but that's a separate copyright, and generally, the label doesn't have an interest in that copyright. So therefore, whenever a label sells a CD, it has to pay whoever does control the copyright in the song, usually a publisher or publishers, a royalty. In the US, this is a regulated system because there is a compulsory license covering the mechanical copying of songs under American copyright law, which means the rate is set in law. So whenever you put out a CD in America, you just go to the law, it tells you what rate to pay. You then have to go and find the publisher or publishers that control the song copyright and pay them that cut. And of course, the publisher then shares that money with the songwriter. So that's how mechanical royalties work in the US. But the label would say, what if the songwriter is the artist that they have signed and with whom they have a contractual relationship? And that's really where this so-called controlled composition clause comes from. It's a sneaky little clause that says, okay, we're going to pay a mechanical royalty when we release this CD, but ultimately, a big chunk of that mechanical royalty is going to go to you, the artist, because you're also the songwriter. So we want to put into the record contract a discount on the mechanical royalty. So rather than paying the statutory rate, the rate in law, we're going to pay 75% of that rate, which basically means that when the mechanical royalties are paid and they flow through the system and they are paid to the writer, they're going to see less than they otherwise would because of this term that they agreed to in their record deal. So it means that artists who are also songwriters, in order to get the record deal, to get the recordings out there, have to agree. Obviously, they don't have to. They don't have to sign this deal, but often they reluctantly do. And in doing so, they agree that when the mechanical royalties are paid, actually, the label is going to pay a lower rate than technically they should, according to the compulsory license and the statutory rate under American copyright law.
Yeah, so that's artists potentially losing a 25% cut of their what they would get on the mechanical royalty through this clause in their contracts. But actually, it often goes further than that, because when an artist co-writes a song with other songwriters, as they often do, then obviously those other writers aren't part of that artist's record deal, and they still need to be paid 100% of the statutory rate. However, the label may still seek to keep its discount in place, and it would do this by taking additional payment due to the other writer or writers from the artist's own mechanical royalties, or, if necessary, their recording royalties. So actually, the artist can end up losing an even bigger cut than 25% of these royalties.
Yes, so depending on how many songwriters the artist collaborates with, what share those other writers have, and I guess in 2020, how big CDs are in terms of the way that artist makes money. Back in the day, this was a really big deal because CDs were the vast majority of the revenue stream. In 2020, for a lot of artists, CDs are a relatively small part of the revenue stream, although we should note there are still some artists who do shift a decent number of CDs. But depending on all of those different criteria, this clause might have a nominal impact on the artist, but it could have quite a significant impact on the artist. And there are plenty of people in the artist community and the management community and lawyers who generally represent artists. To an extent, this is part of what Kanye West was ranting about on Twitter a couple of weeks ago, in that one criticism of record companies, and particularly bigger record companies, although it's not always just big record companies, is that record deals are overly complicated and full of sneaky little clauses like this one. So rather than the label and the artist just agreeing, okay, when we make money, we're going to split it so that the label gets 80% and the artist gets 20%, or the label gets 90% and the artist gets 10%, or maybe it's a 50-50 split or whatever. But rather than just agreeing how we're going to split the money, and then, yeah, possibly saying the label's going to have some costs that it's going to recoup out of the artist's share down the line, certainly a cash advance, but rather than just having those two elements to the deal, there's then all these extra complications, these extra little discounts and deductions that the label is allowed to make that mean that what starts as a 20% artist royalty in reality might end up being a 15% royalty or a 5% royalty or a 2% royalty. And one of the arguments is there should just be a rate. A nice simple rate, yes, possibly an advance to be recouped, but rather than having all of these extra complexities, because it just adds extra work, it adds extra complications, and you're just ultimately taking more money away from the artist. And if you need to take more money away from the artist in order to justify the upfront investment as a label, well, just say that. You know, say if we're going to give you a £2 million advance, the sort of advance that Kanye would want, then we need to have a 13% royalty rather than an 18% royalty or whatever. Rather than saying, oh, we'll give you the industry standard royalty, but then actually we'll screw you over on all of these technicalities and complexities to get that amount down. So that's one of the reasons why not only the songwriters who will directly benefit from this, but also some lawyers and managers and members of the artist community are saying this is a good move, because it's you know, okay, the new BMG, which is the BMG we're talking about, certainly on the recording side, it's not a major. Sometimes they claim that they are. It's a big deal in publishing. It's not really a major when it comes to recordings, but nevertheless, they have a pretty significant recordings business. And so for a significant player in recorded music to be making this gesture and saying it's time to simplify contracts, it's time to get rid of these sneaky little cost-cutting technicalities, as we say, it has been quite widely welcomed by various people in various parts of the wider music industry.
Yeah, so the heads of the big music publisher and songwriting trade bodies in the UK and the US have both welcomed this. So David Israelite, the CEO of the US National Music Publishers Association, said, BMG deserves enormous credit for eliminating this poisonous practice. Controlled composition clauses in record contracts have been one of the most harmful things to ever happen to songwriters. While their impact has been minimised thanks to NMPA's efforts to make them illegal for digital products, there is still enough of a physical product market for controlled composition clauses to continue to plague the songwriter community. This is a wonderful pro-songwriter move by BMG. Meanwhile, Crispin Hunt, who is the chair of the Ivors Academy in the UK, said, I welcome BMG's determination to cease industry-sanctioned practices which uphold inequality for creators. The controlled composition clause has disadvantaged songwriters across music's history. It belongs in a museum along with many other tricks of the trade. BMG's abandonment of this regressive practice is a huge step on music's journey to dignity. Music can't change its past, but we can change its future.
Meanwhile, over at BMG HQ itself, the CEO of the company, Hartvig Masuk, he said, It is unacceptable for the record industry to continue to apply deal terms which are solely designed to reduce the income of musicians. We have heard a lot during the coronavirus crisis of initiatives by music companies to support artists. But the best way to support artists is not to subject them to unfair terms in the first place. And I suppose that latter line there tells you that this is part of a bigger initiative going on at BMG. And you can look at this in two ways. You can either say, oh, BMG, they're the good guys, they're the friendly guys, they want to actually do something to make artist deals fairer, and not just new artist deals, where possibly artists have a little bit more flexibility anyway because of the rise of label services and artist services, so they can negotiate better terms, but to fix the bad terms in old deals. BMG's doing that because they're the good guys, or maybe they're seeing that they could get some competitive advantage here by being seen to be the good guys. BMG ultimately is owned by Bertelsmann, which answers in to a family that control that business. And in some ways, if you are in a private business with relatively few shareholders, in some ways, it's sometimes easier to do stuff like this, to do stuff that is the right thing to do, but which, if you have lots and lots of shareholders on a stock exchange, they might be saying, well, that might be the right thing to do, but how much is it going to cost us? So maybe BMG are doing it to be seen to be the good guys, or maybe they really are the good guys. You can have your own opinion on that. But it is certainly true that this is part of a wider initiative. I mean, for starters, on the back of the Blackout Tuesday initiative that happened a few months ago, back then, BMG said, as all of the majors were announcing how much money they were going to start spending on initiatives to encourage more diversity in the music industry and to support projects that tackle discrimination outside the music industry, back then, BMG said, do you know what? Rather than just doing that, we are going to go back through all of the record deals, many of which BMG sort of kind of inherited, because this is the new BMG that's only just over a decade old, but which bought up quite a lot of catalogue, and with it, legacy record contracts. And back then, what they said they were going to do was they were going to go through to see if there were any contract terms that seemed to be discriminatory against certain artists based on their ethnicity, based on their race, and they were going to address that. And actually, having announced that a few months ago, having announced this new thing regarding the mechanical royalty deduction, they have also revealed that they now have a task force that is looking at all of the different elements of record contracts in America, but also elsewhere, and that there could be some other initiatives in this domain coming up to try and simplify and make artist deals fairer.
Yeah, which shows that BMG is looking at contracts broadly and not just this. Because, I mean, you could say, if you were going to be cynical, you could say that ditching the controlled composition clause alone isn't actually that big a thing. I mean, dropping a deduction on mechanical royalties on physical product alone, I mean, particularly in the US, where physical has really, as we've discussed before, taken a big dive, and an even bigger dive during the pandemic, not that big an amount of money anymore, perhaps. Although, as you said, some artists do still sell a lot of CDs, so it'd be more beneficial for them. But BMG does argue that industry-wide, this is definitely something worth tackling, because data from the RIAA that BMG has looked at, they reckon, show that songwriters lost $14 million across the US industry to this just last year. So there are definitely going to be beneficiaries for this. But in isolation, it's perhaps not the biggest move. So you could say, as a cynic, I mean, in isolation, this one thing, removing a small part of a small royalty on a small part of record sales, isn't that big a deal. But it's something. And it'll be interesting to see what else BMG looks at in their contracts and makes changes on, because there are lots of problematic clauses in record contracts that benefit labels over artists. And it would be interesting to see a label itself start highlighting these.
Yeah, and then I guess if they're assuming they start to do that on a more regular basis, then the other interesting thing is whether or not BMG making a stand on any of these issues will put pressure on other companies. And obviously, really, people are most interested in the major record companies. Will they follow the lead on any of these things? And in a way, I guess one of the reasons why, for example, it wasn't just the Ivors Academy in the UK, various other songwriter groups in the US and elsewhere were welcoming this, and almost the artist community, the songwriting community, the management community need to be bigging up companies like BMG and others who have made gestures. I mean, some indies have done some interesting things on legacy contracts as well over the years. Whenever that happens, if the artist community, songwriter community, management community, etc., are bigging it up, then it means that these gestures from independent players in the market, even big independent players like BMG, might then have an impact on the majors and across the industry at large. But we will see.
Hi, I'm Richard Karn, and you may have seen me on TV talking about the world's number one expandable garden hose. Well, the brand new Pocket Hose Copperhead with Pocket Pivot is here, and it's a total game changer. Old-fashioned hoses get kinks and creases at the spigot, but the Copperhead's Pocket Pivot swivels 360 degrees for full water flow and freedom to water with ease all around your home. When you're all done, this rust-proof anti-burst hose shrinks back down to pocket size for effortless handling and tidy storage. Plus, your super light and ultra-durable pocket hose Copperhead is backed with a 10-year warranty. What could be better than that? I'll tell you what, an exciting radio-exclusive offer just for you. For a limited time, you can get a free pocket pivot and their 10-pattern sprayer with the purchase of any size Copperhead hose. Just text WATER to 64000. That's WATER to 64000 for your two free gifts with purchase. W-A-T-E-R to 64000.
By texting 64000, you agree to receive recurring automated marketing messages from Pocket Hosts. Message and data rates may apply. No purchase required. Terms apply. Available at pockethosts.com/terms.
And finally, while the K-pop group BTS are on a seemingly unstoppable rise at the moment, with their popularity both at home in South Korea and internationally still booming massively, fans are increasingly concerned that their career could as yet be scuppered by South Korea's mandatory military service, which as yet no member of the Seven Strong group has served.
Yes, and in the same way as in order to understand the BMG story, you had to know what a controlled composition clause was, in order to understand this story, you need to know what South Korea's laws say about mandatory military service.
Yes, which is, I mean, things you never thought you'd discuss on a music industry podcast. So yeah, in South Korea, all able-bodied men between the ages of 18 and 28 are required by law to serve 2 years in the military. There are exceptions to this occasionally, very, very occasionally, but to date, being a K-pop star has never been one of those exceptions. There have been classical musicians who haven't had to serve, and there was a football player who plays for Tottenham who didn't have to serve. But generally, there are almost no exceptions to this. And in fact, it's quite a big part of South Korean culture. And so this is becoming a particularly pressing issue for the band because their oldest member, Jin, will turn 28 in December, which means the clock is ticking for him to start that military service.
Now, it's worth noting, even if it's kind of stating the obvious, BTS are not the first K-pop outfit to have members between the ages of 18 and 28. So this is not the first time that we've had K-pop stars who have military service to complete, possibly when they are at the peak of their fame. And in the past, when that has happened, I guess, where there are groups, sometimes the management team of these groups, if they're losing members because they've got to go off and do military service, one solution is, well, you use those 2 years for the other members. This doesn't work if they're all the same age, I guess. Although there's a 10-year window, isn't there, for them to do the military service. So while some of them are doing their military service, you launch solo careers for the other members. And then when those people come back, the ones who launch solo careers go off and do their military service, and the ones who've done the military service, they launch their solo careers, and the hope being that then at some point everybody is back and the group can carry on regardless is one tactic that's been used with mixed success in the past.
Yeah, because as you said, there's this 10-year window in which they might go off for 2 years and serve this military service. So you could end up with quite a long period of time where you never have the full lineup of the group together, even if they're still operating. And that does pose problems for keeping the momentum going with a pop group, and quite often it does entirely scupper their career. They do stuff to try to keep things going, but it doesn't quite work. Fans move on, and arguably BTS have benefited from this. With other groups going off into military service, they filled a gap in which they've been able to grow massively in just a few years. And you know, not just in South Korea, but internationally. And they are, I mean, without doubt, they are the biggest international K-pop group that has ever existed. And part of the reason they got there was because other groups had to kind of give up and leave a hole for them to become that group.
But it's that international success, which I guess, well, it's why we're talking about it on Setlist when we've never talked about this before, when it happened to any of the other K-pop acts previously. But I suppose it does make it arguably a more interesting story for various reasons. First of all, because this time you have a global fan base who are now slightly panicking that this could put the whole BTS franchise, or certainly the full lineup of the group, on pause. And so you're starting to get the international fan base campaigning on this, as well as the fan base within South Korea. But there's also the fact that BTS has become such a phenomenon on the global stage. The amount of money they are generating, not just for themselves, but for the little mini industry that has grown around BTS, is bringing in a lot of money. So it's been interesting watching the fans campaigning to try and get the powers that be in South Korea to agree to some sort of scheme that would either stop them having to do military service at all or some other sneaky way of getting around it. And then also the interesting thing is, I mean, we're watching this from afar, we're monitoring what's being reported on in the South Korean media here, but whereas initially it seemed to be that people in government were saying, we don't care about these campaigns and these proposals. We don't care that there are people all over the world now campaigning on this. The law is the law. The rule is the rule. They've got to do their military service. But in the last week, I think, I mean, you're watching this more closely than I am, we've actually started to see, even within government, possibly people are coming round to thinking that maybe some sort of special plan will be needed for these guys.
Yeah, I mean, Wired did a really interesting piece on this a couple of weeks ago, which I'll link to in the show notes, where one of the things they looked at was all the different petitions that fans of the band are putting forward with different ideas. I mean, it must be strange for the South Korean government with all these teenagers from across the world sending them petitions with ideas for what their policy should be on something. That's not something that happens often. But I mean, there's the basic obvious one, which is grant them all an exemption so they don't have to do it, which the government has said is not going to happen. It's a very important thing that everyone has to do it. And culturally, it's a very important thing. So other fans have taken account of that and said, well, maybe all of them could be allowed to serve their time in the military together at the same time, which wouldn't normally happen. And then they'd only be out of action for 2 years. And maybe a pop group going missing for 2 years isn't that big a thing. Maybe they could get, you know, enough stuff recorded beforehand that they could fill up that 2 years and no one would notice they were gone. Another one, which was the oddest one, is to keep them in the public eye by sending them to do their basic training on some disputed islands in the Sea of Japan, which is, it's a long-running international diplomatic dispute where South Korea and Japan both claim ownership of these islands. And so the idea is that you'd send the members of BTS there and then they would, I guess, draw attention to that dispute, which would then draw BTS into this political dispute, which I'm not sure is a great way of keeping a band's popularity up. There have already been issues with that in Japan after one member of the band said on Twitter, I think, that South Korea should own these islands, and then they had a TV appearance cancelled as a result of it. So, I mean, that would be an odd decision to make, but I suppose it's one that could be. Although, as you said in the last week, there has been a little bit of a shift in this because people have started looking at the amount of money that BTS and their big hit management company are bringing in, which is now, because it's such a big international business, is delivering an estimated $4.65 billion to the South Korean economy, which is that's a decent chunk of their GDP. The overall GDP, I think, is about $1.7 trillion. So they're a significant earner for the South Korean economy. And so people are starting to say, it would be weird to just give that up because you are absolutely firm on this band having to serve this military service. And so last week, a member of the ruling Democratic Party, No Wong Rae, said that the government should come up with an alternative plan for the band. He said, their role in boosting Korea's prestige to the world is an important measure. We must start a serious discussion on offering special alternatives to military conscription to the group's members. Military duty is sacred, but not everyone has to hold a rifle. And that debate as we said, is going to have to start quite soon because the clock is now ticking for at least one member of the group to take up that military service. I mean, I suppose one issue is that, I mean, quite a lot of groups, by the time, if they're all a similar age, by the time they get to 28, their time in the spotlight is gone. I guess it's possibly quite likely that it's unusual for someone to get to 28 and still be rising towards the peak of their fame.
Are you saying that you can only make it in K-pop if you're under 25? You're being ageist here.
Well, I think that's just true of pop generally. I mean, less so now.
You're saying pop fans are ageist.
I don't think that's a controversial
statement.
It's not
that Andy Malt's ageist.
Quite a lot of people are famous in their early 20s, and that time doesn't... I suppose that's changed somewhat in recent years, but I don't know.
Usually a pop act, by the time they reach the age of 28, will be in that limbo period between being a big success and milking the nostalgia circuit. They would be in 4 or 5 years of either downtime or desperately trying to get a solo career off the ground before admitting that's not going to happen and reforming for the reunion tour. I'm applying UK pop trends to an entirely different genre of music here. But who knows? It's an interesting story to follow. And as you say, we never thought that in the CMU Daily or on the Setlist podcast, we would be discussing the ins and outs of compulsory military service in South Korea. But BTS took us there.
Yeah. I mean, BTS have other things to be focusing on because they've got a new album out next month. That'll be their second album of the year. So maybe they are trying to churn things out and get as much out into the world before it all falls apart. But it's an interesting story, and as with everything we discuss on this edition of the show, I will add all of the relevant links to the show notes that you can find in your podcast player right now or at setlistpodcast.com. But that is it for this edition of the show. So all that remains for me to say is please subscribe, rate, review, and is there another thing? Email us, setlist@unlimitedmedia.co.uk. That's everything. Setlist is the music business podcast from CMU. It's presented by Andy Malt and Chris Cook. And for more on CMU, go to completemusicupdate.com.
Hi, I'm Richard Karn, and you may have seen me on TV talking about the world's number one expandable garden hose. Well, the brand new Pocket Hose Copperhead with Pocket Pivot is here, and it's a total game changer. Old-fashioned hoses get kinks and creases at the spigot, but the Copperhead's Pocket Pivot swivels 360 degrees for full water flow and freedom to water with ease all around your home. When you're all done, this rust-proof anti-burst hose shrinks back down to pocket size for effortless handling and tidy storage. Plus, your super light and ultra-durable pocket hose Copperhead is backed with a 10-year warranty. What could be better than that? I'll tell you what, an exciting radio-exclusive offer just for you. For a limited time, you can get a free pocket pivot and their 10-pattern sprayer with the purchase of any size Copperhead hose. Just text WATER to 64000. That's WATER to 64000 for your two free gifts with purchase. W-A-T-E-R to 64000.
By texting 64000, you agree to receive recurring automated marketing messages from Pocket Hose. Message and data rates may apply. No purchase required. Terms apply. Available at pockethose.com/terms.
Hi, I'm Richard Karn, and you may have seen me on TV talking about the world's number one expandable garden hose. Well, the brand new Pocket Hose Copperhead with Pocket Pivot is here, and it's a total game changer. Old-fashioned hoses get kinks and creases at the spigot, but the Copperhead's Pocket Pivot swivels 360 degrees for full water flow and freedom to water with ease all around your home. When you're all done, this rust-proof anti-burst hose shrinks back down to pocket size for effortless handling and tidy storage. Plus, your super light and ultra-durable pocket hose Copperhead is backed with a 10-year warranty. What could be better than that? I'll tell you what, an exciting radio-exclusive offer just for you. For a limited time, you can get a free pocket pivot and their 10-pattern sprayer with the purchase of any size Copperhead hose. Just text WATER to 64000. That's WATER to 64000 for your two free gifts with purchase. W-A-T-E-R to 64000.
By texting 64000, you agree to receive recurring automated marketing messages from Pocket Hose. Message and data rates may apply. No purchase required. Terms apply. Available at pockethose.com/terms.